There's no time limit on this. Some want to
Oh.
rush it because they want to go away. Others stay there as long as they want, until they decide that their heart's as ready as they're ever going to be, because one of the hardest things is walking away from that room.
Welcome to Resilient Moms Hope, Healing, and Living After Loss podcast. My name is Teresa Reiniger, and I am a mindset and grief transformation coach. I'm here to hold space for grieving moms to find support and resources to navigate the grief of infertility, pregnancy, or childhood loss. You will hear heartfelt conversations where practical strategies of healing will be shared. Inspiration and encouragement to guide you to find purpose from your pain. Thank you for joining me. I encourage you to hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss an episode and connect with me on social media. Now take a deep breath to feel safe, lean in, open your heart, and find strength in the stories shared. Together, let's explore the power of hope, healing, and living after loss.
I wanted to share with you real quick a couple things that I have coming up before we get into this week's episode, because they're right around the corner. I will be doing my second annual Bereaved Mother's Day brunch on May 4th. It will be 11 to 2. It will be in the St. Louis area, actually in Belleville, Illinois. Of course, we're going to have a delicious brunch. We're going to have some speakers, some discussion, and then also we will have a beautiful butterfly release at the end to honor and remember all of those children. The link will be in the show notes, or you can find that information if you follow me on social media. I have created an event on my personal page and also an event on my Living After Grief Facebook. You can get all the information there. I just wanted to make sure that I got that invite out to you here, this is where you follow me most frequently. It'll be a beautiful event, and I hope that you can join me. The other thing that I know we're going to talk about in this episode is an event that Rebecca and I kind of partnered together in doing a few things, which you'll hear, but we have an axe throwing event coming up on the 21st. First of April, and this is for bereaved parents. And the link for that will also be in the show notes. If you'd like to join us, it will be a great event where you can meet other bereaved parents, and just, you know, throw axe and just get to know other people in the St. Louis area, and connect with them, and so you can support each other. So that's it. I hope you enjoy this episode with Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca. Welcome to the podcast. I am excited for you to be here for us to chat a little bit, like we chat all the time. But
right.
This is exciting for me that we're chatting, we're recording, and we're going to share what great conversations we always have when we chat. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome.
I am, we've met, gosh, has it been 2 years ago? A year and a half ago?
Yeah, a year and a half or
so. Yeah, it's been a little while. And just so the listeners, Rebecca and I have been a part of. Rebecca is a nurse, and she runs the staff member, I guess, that's part of the SHARE organization at Anderson Hospital, local to us here in Maryville, Illinois. And so that's where we met. And so I help with that support group. So we see each other often. We support women together often, every couple times a month sometimes. But anyway, so just so people know how we're connected, and you're going to learn more about all of that as we go forward. But before we do all that, Rebecca, beautiful Rebecca, share with the audience who Rebecca is.
Yes, thank you. Like Teresa said, I am a nurse at Anderson Hospital. I have worked here now for almost 20 years. This year will be my 20th year at the hospital.
Wow.
I've officially been here longer than I was alive before I became a nurse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've been a nurse now for 16 years, but I worked here while I was in school. So my entire nursing career has been in labor and delivery, something very passionate for me. I love it, all the ins and outs. So I am that. I am a wife, a mother. I'm very active in my church, a part of the church children's group, and also just doing a lot of things with my family, my overall family and my close immediate family. But we love just to see as many adventures as we can, in state, out of state, being tourists in St. Louis. We just love to be adventurous. So,
I love that. I love the adventures.
yes.
I love that a lot. Well, gosh, I'm going to probably ask a lot of questions, and you will have a lot of information, I know, without me asking questions to share, since you've been in labor and delivery for 20 years. You have probably seen a lot, experienced a lot. I'm sure you can share with us how things have changed in those 20 years. I'm sure there's been a big change. So I'm excited for you to share that. So I'm going to just let you start sharing about your career, what you've seen at Anderson, how things have changed now that you're in the role as, I don't know exactly what your title is, share coordinator. I don't know. How things, what you're doing to shift things or how that's changed. So share with us like your career in labor and delivery and of course about loss and grief and all of those things.
Like I said, I started whenever I was in nursing school, so I was a nurse assistant, so I've seen things from all levels of nursing, which is good. Getting to see all the facets because you're also appreciative of all those around you and all the layers that encounter the nursing career. And then I have done postpartum labor, and most currently I'm working in the nursery. That's where my passion is for the babies, but mostly for the families in general and just taking care of them. About a year and a half ago, the position came open for our bereavement coordinator, the share coordinator at the hospital. The lady that was previously doing it, Barb, she had been doing it for approximately 10 years. And I had worked with her a lot in the background. Share has always been something passionate to my family, to myself, just to me as a person, just wanting to give hope to families. One of my favorite things following a loss is just being able to care for the baby the same way that I would a live birth, but just being able to treat that baby respectfully, whether it's giving them a bath or dressing them, but just presenting them to their parents and letting them have those few minutes, hours, whatever it may be for that family, but to still to treat them with the dignity and respect that they deserve, is something that has always been very, very close to my heart. So I was actually about 24 weeks pregnant with our rainbow baby whenever I took the position of the share coordinator. So that was a little bit tricky on a lot of levels, coming into this role of loss and pregnancy loss and being pregnant at the same time. I talked with it with my husband. We prayed about it. We went back and forth, and I finally just went to my director and asked, "Okay, what do you think?" And she's like, "Oh, I was hoping you would come to me," but I was like, "I don't know," but we worked through the kinks, and it was good. In April of 2022, me and my husband had encountered a loss. We were 9 weeks pregnant. We were in the middle of buying our first home together. We had two other children who were 1.5 and 3 at the time. And I started bleeding pretty significantly while we were actually doing our walkthrough for our house right before we were going to purchase it. And I knew in my heart that things were not good in that moment. But we went ahead, kept our doctor's appointment for the next day. I had contacted them and they said, "Yeah, just we'll do an ultrasound." And sure enough, our lives changed pretty significantly in those moments. So at that point, I became a patient in this world that I've been living for the last, like I said, 15, 20 years, depending on which way you're looking at it, as a nurse or just as a staff member. So that put an extra jump in my heart whenever the position came open to be able to kind of speak to it personally,
Yeah.
to share with families, the other side of things, that while living it is hard, that there can be hope. It doesn't mean you're replacing a baby, as we did with our rainbow baby. There's still, loss and grief there, but there was hope at the same time. And so since then, we did have our baby. And after that, I really am trying to focus on bringing education to the OB community in general about the SHARE program, pregnancy loss, grief in general, just that grief is, it's okay. You don't have to just be stuck, but it's okay to still think about things, and just really health education within the OB community. My fellow coworkers are OB providers. That's really where I'm focusing now, is going to into our doctor's offices and talking with their staff and the providers, that there are resources out there for these families, and how to be gentle in their speech, and just kind of what to do next. There's not a lot of training that goes on in medical school or nursing school. People just go rogue and figure it out, or they had a family member that did it and that's how they're dealing with it. So there's not a lot of knowledge. So trying to impart some grace and some wisdom on these
Yes.
people. And a lot of that has come from talking with our moms in the support group, of hearing the stories that have hurt them, and wanting to do anything possible to change that, to help protect other women. I've learned so much from the families that are in our support group and are supporting me, like yourself and the other members that are super active, helping me grow in this process as well. And just becoming an active support group that is vocal and willing to speak out, again, mostly for education, and also just letting people know that they're not alone. That's really where our focus is right now.
Well, and I think what's unique with your situation is all the years of experience and probably things that you did, and I'd like you to speak to that. From when you first started, how has the care, because I'm sure it has changed, with even an early loss like yourself, like what happens when someone comes in? You may not even see them, I guess is part of it. You may not see them. They may have that loss at home. They may come in, I would think, for the hospital for a D&C, and you may not see them in labor and delivery, or they may just come into the emergency room. So can you speak to that, especially let's start there with an early loss. Kind of, if you speak to that for from personally, and then also from the medical part of that at the hospital and maybe at the doctor's offices, and where the education is.
I think currently it's still one of the biggest unknowns, and like poor education. A lot of people just say, oh, it's not early enough, and then just blow it off. Oh, it was just this, it was just an ectopic, it was just, you were only this many, and everything was just only, and it really diminishes the feelings that people may be feeling. It also causes the mom or family unit to kind of diminish that life that was created. And some people maybe were just coming to grips of welcoming that pregnancy into their family. Maybe it wasn't something they expected, maybe it was, but even still, at any point, whenever it does get lost, it kind of makes you think, well, maybe if I would have loved it earlier, maybe it wouldn't have, there's a lot of feelings that come up with those early losses. And you don't get to know that baby because it's too early to see them, to feel them, to do those things. So there is a little bit of, I feel, emotional separation that makes you feel like maybe you can't quite connect. Because then you do either deliver at home, or go to the emergency room, or to go into the surgical route. And again, you don't get to see a lot in those instances. And just walking into the hospital, a lot of times, things just become surgical specimens at that point. Over the course of time, I have learned, with doing this job that we do have a local funeral home that has partnered with our hospital that has taken it upon themselves to say, no, these babies are somebody and they're somebody's babies, and they have collected them, cremated them, and kept them in a collective urn. And last October, we had the opportunity to bury 9 years worth of babies in our Angel of Hope statue outside of our hospital. The amount of people that I have come in contact now that have delivered during that time frame have a sense of peace that they never knew. I had at least two of my coworkers that had lost babies and had to have DNCs, that whenever I just told them, they just broke down because they were like, we just never knew. Most people had been afraid to ask the question, well, what happens to my baby? Because they were afraid of the answer. So I'm so thankful for that opportunity. And then now going forward, we're going to receive them yearly. So again, their parents will know going into that procedure that they can do it with their whole heart and feel comfortable because they know that their baby will be treated respectfully, even at an early age, at an unknown time of what they wouldn't maybe know what to do with things, but that somebody is still taking care of them, and then they will have a final resting place. That was something for us. We did deliver at home at 9 weeks, and there was a lot of uncertainty. Like I mentioned, we were moving. So I was like, what do I do with this? I can't do anything. And so we were able to collect it, and we went to my parents' house, and we were able to bury the baby there. And I know for my husband that that was one of the hardest things that he's ever had to do, was to dig the hole. My dad had offered to come home that day and to do it, but it was something my husband wanted to do. He didn't want to do it, obviously, but he it was
I
something he
suppose.
needed to do for himself and for us. And so in that moment, it was just the two of us, and we were alone. But my parents have lived there my entire life, and they're not planning to go anywhere. So at least for me and us, we have a place to go. But I know so many people, you don't know what to do, and your body is doing crazy things in those moments that you can't think rationally. So for our families that do come to the hospital, I am happy for the progress that has been made with our hospital, the communication that has been brought forth that families can know, and maybe people can choose to come to the hospital knowing that things are going to be okay when they do get here.
I know when I had the two miscarriages I had years ago, and had DNC, there back then they didn't collect all of that. It just went with everything else, that was removed from a human body. And so I won't go into that, but that's just what happened. And I'm so grateful that over time that has changed a lot. I'm not sure it's changed at every hospital, but several that I have talked to, in the area, that's kind of what's going on. And talking to funeral homes as well, since I previously worked at a funeral home. Just knowing that there are funeral homes that are willing to take those babies and cremate them so that they can be buried, or even just help a family with that process for sure is just so important. There's so much healing, I think, with that. And I'll go back to what you kind of was talking about. I think when it's an early loss like that, there's so much emotions that the woman feels. And you said something like, maybe if I would have loved the baby, sooner, because maybe didn't know you were going to be pregnant or whatever. But I think there's like the blame and the shame. Like, what did I do? This baby was in my body, and what did I do? Did I in some way cause this? And so that's a lot of the grief that happens, but I don't think people understand. how a woman feels when there's those really early losses and late losses, really. You know, it's still part of it, but I think early sometimes is I don't want to say I wanted it was going to say more difficult. They're all difficult, just different or more difficult in a different way, I guess I should say. I should
I
say.
think when they're early, some people, or most people, depending on the age of it, haven't even told other people yet. So
Right.
then there becomes a loss that people didn't even know existed. And then people are wondering why you're so emotional all the time. And so then you have to say, oh, I was, but now I'm not. But you have to say it quickly because if you mention it, then there's a congratulations, but then there's a quick, no, hold on. So I think it's kind of a double fold of I didn't even get to tell anybody, and then now it's lost. So it's kind of that added layer of, for myself, we hadn't told anybody. So then I was taking off work, and people are, I'm not typically a person that takes off work. So immediately, whenever I called in, I immediately was getting messages of, why aren't you coming to work? Like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I appreciated that. But in that moment, there was no percent that I could answer those questions. And even that, just because of the nature of my job, I wanted to go back to work. Thankfully, I had a very caring OB doctor that said, no, you're not going to. And I was like, I'll be okay. And he very much said that he was giving my note to my director and said this was the date that I was allowed to come back, and I was not allowed to come back sooner than that. But I needed somebody to safeguard me for that. I did have a few coworkers that were like, no, absolutely not. Like, we'll do what we need to do to keep you out of here. So like just having, close coworkers like that, but as a nurse, you were just compassionate, and I knew we were leaving, I was leaving people shorthanded, and that's not the type of person to be. So it kind of added on a layer of guilt that, again, I hadn't even told people I was pregnant. So I was like, well, by the way, and I would have rather have just had my gallbladder removed. That would have been easier. But so it was, yeah, it's just kind of a lot, I think, in those early losses that you're kind of a double whammy of what's happening.
So you had mentioned earlier, education with the OB offices and stuff like that. I'm assuming that you want to do that because of language, things that are being said, how they're being treated, which, we don't want to, I can't think of another word, but bash the doctors. We don't want to do that. That's not the intent here at all, by any means. I do feel like the doctors, sometimes they see it losses more often than other people. So they're accustomed to it, and I think sometimes that leads to some of the things that they do that aren't necessarily the best thing to do. And so how are you working towards that? You said about an education for that. Can you elaborate a little more on that, what you'd like to see? And we talked a little bit too before, like if they're in the ER or the doctor's offices, you may not even know. So I'm assuming that part of that education is too that you're here and send them your way so you can support them. So elaborate on that.
Just mainly bringing forth that in those moments, that's not the time to call a baby a fetus. While that is the medical term at that possible gestation, but just kind of bringing it down and using gentle language. Or another harsh thing that comes for early losses is using the word abortion. Like, that is what it is medically called, a spontaneous abortion. And that's hard. It's hard to hear. It's hard to see on your medical transcripts or your bill. So just kind of bringing it down to gentler language, can that in itself can be healing. And just taking the time, because these things, they never happen on somebody's good time schedule because there's no good time for a baby to pass. But they may come whenever it's unexpected bleeding and they, call the office for an emergency appointment, or, they're getting a routine ultrasound and then you have to stop and add in that extra patient. So just kind of having the provider take a deep breath before they walk in there and just know that it's going to be a little bit of time. Yes, it's going to be throwing their day off, but it's only affecting one day for them to where it's affecting the rest of the life for the family that they're about to speak to. And, even for me, even if it's just pretend, please just pretend for 5 minutes while you're talking to them. Just showing a little bit of compassion and empathy in those moments can go light years for the family. So just for me, I'm providing the resources to the providers that one share exists, that I am there. And I do have the benefit of having worked with these providers my whole career. So some of them, it's their whole career too, as they've been coming into our hospital. So to know that these things exist also for their staff members, I like for the medical assistants or the secretaries, go with them when the provider is there, because as soon as the doctor walks out, everybody always has questions. So knowing what they have said can be helpful too for somebody to translate it for them, or just to be with them so they're not alone in that room in that moment. Thinking of things for the doctor of, scheduling those appointments early in the morning where they're not going to run into a pregnant person, or can this be a phone call if we're monitoring lab results and they're not going the way that we want? Can we just make this a phone call or a telehealth appointment so that way we don't have to come in and re-traumatize going into the hospital? Same thing for the ER, like that we're here, that they can call anytime and at any point. They can call over to myself or to the OB department, and that we can take these people, because pregnant women are our specialty, and in those moments they're still a pregnant woman. They are entering the postpartum period, and that in itself runs a whole other gamut of emotions, and reminding patients and providers and caregivers that postpartum is still there even after a loss, because your body is going through really, really hard things. So we're adding postpartum emotions on top of grief, and that's just a double layer of hard. So just reaching out to the providers that, again, that share exists, and that it doesn't matter the length of the loss. Like somebody could be newly pregnant and in their intake talk about a previous loss, and that could totally change the trajectory of their pregnancy. And or why does this lady keep calling and asking so many questions? Why can't she just accept her baby is okay? And just letting them know, like, you're always afraid. Like, everything is always scary. So, knowing again that we're here, that we can connect them to other moms that have walked a similar path with them can be really helpful for lost families.
Well, good. I love that you're able to do that, and I think that you have an advantage on that just because you've been there so long and you know these doctors, you've worked with them, you've seen them. There's a relationship already built there, and I'm sure a relationship of respect there as well. So let's talk a little bit. We kind of talked a lot that for that time with those early losses. Let's shift to talk more about, stillbirths. So in Illinois, that is 20 weeks or after 20 weeks. And I know that's different, I believe, from state to state. It varies just a little bit. I think some states it might be 16 weeks, 18 weeks, but I know here in Illinois, I believe it's 20, and I think Missouri is the same. We're so close to them. Talk about that, because at that point, they're coming to you. They're not necessarily, they could, but they're not necessarily delivering at home, I guess. Statistic-wise, they're probably more so coming to you because they've went to the doctor and their doctor's sending them over. So talk more about that. How is that different? Because I know that there's different things that are done, different things that you guys do, that you're mandated to do. But I want to talk either way, you could talk about that, but also just really more for the care of the baby and the moms and dads, grandparents, everyone that's involved in that. Talk about what you guys do at your hospital right now. Let's just talk about that. I have another question, but I'll do one thing at a
Yeah,
time.
we it's hard. We do most of the time get the luxury of the if they are found in the office will immediately call us, so we will know that at some point. Sometimes it's scheduled, sometimes the family just comes when they're ready, but we at least have their name because just like any other check-in, as soon as they come in, like we, you know, we go through our questions. So if we know her name, we can stop right there. As soon as we know her name, we don't have to ask her why she's there. Because sometimes just getting her name out is more than enough. Typically, then we do have a specific room that is set aside for our bereavement families. It's a bigger room. It has more space that if they do want their family members to come, that there's more space for family to be. And we do not restrict visitors for our lost families. We do have for regular families, we do have certain restrictions, but for our lost families, anybody that they want to be there to support them is welcome to be there. And same for visiting hours and times. And in that, we just kind of remind them that they're in control at that moment because everything in their life has been taken away from them. With that previous notification that the baby was gone, all sense of control was lost. So letting that mom know that, kind of just talking through the plan that, you know, she's going to go into a bed and we're going to start an IV and, you know, kind of go through the process. And typically we begin an induction at that point. But at any moment, if she's overwhelmed, like just to tell us to stop or wait, or I need a minute, just giving them some. Just even that little bit of control can make a difference. One of the hardest parts for us as caregivers is whenever they come to the pushing part. Because usually when we're pushing, it's something that we're encouraging them, we're coaching them, we're wanting this to be over because we want them to see their baby. But whenever their baby isn't going to be alive and cry, it's a very somber. We're still coaching them because we want the pain to be over, but then whenever they meet that baby, it's the beginning of their end. And so usually when they can tell that they're getting close to delivery, they stall out on pushing. Sometimes we have to remind some of the hasty providers because they wanted to get over. And we're like, hold on, like just give her a few contractions to not push because usually by then everybody in the room is crying. Because, like I said, when the baby comes, that's the end for her, and then it's also her forever. So, kind of coming to that, it's hard to find a coaching to encourage her that what she's doing is working, but not to be over animated by it. And then after the delivery, it is completely up to the family. Some like to hold the baby right away. Some need a few minutes. It also depends on how the baby looks, how long it's been. The age of the baby, how things go, but the family can hold the baby right away and they can keep the baby as long as they want. Or if they need a minute, we will then receive the baby, dress them, give them a bath. We do offer pictures if family wants that. They can do pictures as a family or we can do pictures simply of the baby. And it's something that we hold on to forever. So even if they're like, yes, I want pictures, and then they change their mind, no, I'm not sure. If we've already taken them, then we hold on to the memory card. But then we also have them professionally edited to where they look as gentle as possible. And then the family can have those to open or to not at any point that they're ready. And then we have a cooling cot that helps keep the baby as preserved as possible. That was donated by two grandmas that had lost their grandbabies several years ago that was donated to the hospital. And with that, it comes a little basket. So then the baby can be placed in a bassinet basket right next to the mom. So even if her arms are tired or she wants to take a rest, the baby can be safe and can be next to her. So then it's somewhat of a sense of normal that the baby is close and Yeah, we try to let them have, there's no time limit on this. Some want to rush it because they want to go away. Others stay there as long as they want, until they decide that their heart's as ready as they're ever going to be, because one of the hardest things is walking away from that room. So yeah, then families have the option, to send a baby for an autopsy, or to do cremation or burial. After 20 weeks, they do have to choose one of those options. So another thing that we do is walk them through that process. Most of these girls are young, and have never experienced giant loss to where they had to make those decisions. So calling a funeral home for the first time when you're 25 is it's a big deal, especially whenever it's for your person. Those are heavy decisions, things you've never even looked at. So sometimes we will bring in the family if they're close with their family. A lot of time, the patient or the dad, the father of the baby's dad, like that's something that the grandpas like to do. They may have experienced it with their own family or their own parents, that calling the funeral home isn't scary for them, but it helps them feel like they're helping their child and also honoring their grandchild in that moment. So kind of pointing family to how they can help, because they're just as lost and broken, and wanting to do something. So giving them chores, whether it's going and getting food or, bringing comfy clothes, those kinds of things. Kind of, I like to think that we're kind of the coordinators on the background, for all the moving pieces in that, while also caring for the parents in those moments.
Well, I love that you guys have really thought about the dignity and the care, of mom and baby and the entire family really is just so important, and that there's so many things that you offer to them because, like you said, they've never experienced this. They have no way, really, most of the time, know what can be done, what can't be done, and I feel like mostly there isn't anything that can't be done. Just from listening to other podcasts and talking to people, there's just so much that can be done. I just heard recently even that a family was able to transport the baby themselves to the funeral home. And so I was like, wow, that was different. I had never heard that, but I'm like, wow, that could be a good thing. And it depends on moms, I'm sure. Some would never, probably never be able to emotionally do that, but others probably could. So that was interesting to hear that. And it could be another thing that state to state, like the state allows that, but the state does not, So typically, how does that work? And I'm just looking at things as far as a funeral home because I've worked at one. Do the funeral directors ever come in to get information and talk to mom and dad at the funeral home, or do they need to, our grandma and grandpa, go to the funeral home or do that over the phone, or what do you guide them to do as far as making those arrangements for their child?
To start the process, they usually just call, and sometimes it will be even before the baby has actually delivered. Some people, if they are affiliated with a specific funeral home because of their family, they may just call that funeral home and let them know that this will be impending, just so that way they do have a little bit of heads up. But most of the time, it's done through phone communication. And then after discharge, then if the baby is not going for an autopsy, then we call the funeral home and let them know that, the parents have been discharged, and whenever they're ready to pick up the baby, they can. We try to keep the baby on our unit as if possible. One, because it's a lot for even us as care providers to go down to the morgue. Nobody wants to do that. And then it's hard. Even after talking with multiple funeral directors now, and funeral attendants, even them coming to the hospital to receive a baby and having to go to the morgue, it's hard on them. Like it's not natural. It's not okay. So we try to just keep the baby with us, and then they have a very special transportation bag. And if they are coming to our department, then they bring their un-logoed vehicles, and then people don't know when they're coming up to our department that that's what they're doing. But usually the parents have been discharged by the time we're doing that, and then they kind of take care of things on their own to set up actual arrangements. But a lot of it over the phone, and then if they're doing final details, I would assume that they would have to go in person, but it's a little bit more down the road. So,
Sure. I just remember when I did work at the funeral home, there were times where the funeral director went to the hospital. Of course, this was pre-2020, where they would go in to do all of that, taking all of the information and making all of the arrangements so that the mom, and family did not have to, go to the funeral home. So eliminating a step for them, which was really good. And like you said, picking the baby up, from labor and delivery, I think, is much better. I've heard them, like you mentioned, the morgue, but I've heard them even soften that to, will the baby will be taken to the receiving room, so just terminology. I think, like we talked about earlier, is so important to soften things, for them because it's such a difficult time. So I know too, you have lots of literature. You have, you said pictures. I'm assuming that there's probably opportunity for footprints, all of those kind of things. Anything else that you can think of that maybe you've heard about and you don't necessarily have it at your hospital and would like to start doing it or bring it to your hospital. Anything like that that comes to mind?
Yeah, right now we do handprints and footprints, but those can be tricky depending on the state of the baby. So I do know that some facilities they do clay casting to where you can actually, it's a casting model and you can actually put the baby's whole hands and feet in there. And then some places have a big enough cast that they can. If the parents want to then hold the baby's hands like around the parents' hands, around the hands or feet, they can do that as well.
How beautiful.
So that would be something if, time and money were no object, that's something that I would really love to see. Because I do know that it's a process, but I think it's something tangible, and that's something that these families just want, is something that they can bring home their baby. But in those moments, it would be actual life-size. Their baby of their foot, their feet, how big they are, and it would be 3D. I did also just recently watch, there's I think it's in either Ohio or Indiana, a hospital has brought a 3D printer in that they can scan a picture, like if they have a picture of the baby, they can scan and make a 3D model of their hands or feet. And that's just incredible to me, again, because then it wouldn't break. There would be no fear that that something like that would break. So I do see hopefully technology over time helping to change some of that, again, to have tangible things to go home with these families. But they do get a memento box here, and if the baby's old enough or has hair, we include a lock of hair, the blankets or any of the things that the baby was wrapped in, they get to take those home. So again, it's something that the baby did physically touch or lay in. But anything tangible that they can have, we try to give to them.
I love that, and I love that you shared that because I know there are people that listen to the podcast And there were lots of people, just like you said, grandparents donated for the cooling pot, that I can see someone thinking, what can I do? And that would be an opportunity for them to honor, because that's the reason for all that, is really to remember and honor those babies that, aren't living with us, that have been lost, have passed away, that to honor them by doing those kind of things, which is real important, really, real important for them. So I love that you shared that. Unique. I've seen that, but never really thought about that, for a baby that's passed away doing that mold thing. I've seen it for other things, grandparents or whatever, doing those hands and things. That sounds like a great thing to look into starting to do. So yeah. So anything else that you would like to see at your hospital that maybe you don't have yet, that's seen at other hospitals, or anything that you guys do that you're like, this is so important that I wish other hospitals would do this as well. So either way on that, or both.
One other thing we do for pictures for our early babies, it's called water immersion photos. So we are able to, we have a big plastic bowl that has some flowers in it that we were able to submerge the baby in that, which is hard on us at first because there's something that began very unnatural about putting the baby underwater. But in those moments, those pictures are incredible. Early lost babies are hard. Their bodies just aren't the same. Their skin is not the same. And so in those pictures, it takes a lot of that harshness off, that it looks very similar to the pictures that you see on TV, of whether it's computer generated or pictures that they've seen of ultrasounds or with guided technology. It allows the baby to look as if they were in the womb. And so, like, those are really special to us. Even just our staff members are like night and day, like, oh, I didn't realize the baby could look so good. And so I think it's good for them as well. I know some facilities have like a bereavement cart that have snacks or travel supplies. I know other facilities have had people that have lost babies, maybe they just went to the doctor that day and then got sent right over, or they weren't feeling the baby move and came to labor and delivery and the baby was lost and they opted just to stay. Well, they came with nothing. We all know how great hospital shampoo is. So something just gentle like that, even if it's just from a hotel, but even that hotel is better than hospital shampoo. But having just something gentle like that of, a little travel kit to just kind of let them feel at home for a minute. I know one of our families, they were here visiting family. They live out of state and they were just here for the weekend visiting family to have their world come crashing down on them. So, again, like having some resources for her to be able to travel back to her home eventually. Just to get them there, like those kinds of things, but like a bereavement cart with, snacks, and they can order those things at any time. But again, nobody wants unnecessary people coming out of in and out of their room. So just something that they could have for free rein, would be nice.
Oh, I love that. I think that's a great, great idea. We're sharing lots of good ideas for those that want to honor someone that wants to, just don't know what to do, support and help others that have experienced loss. So I think those are great suggestions, great things. And I hope in a very short period of time that there you guys have those there, at Anderson, because those would be really good things, really good things for the families to have. So I know you and I because we do talk a lot and we always are surfacing all sorts of ideas and good things to do. Now I know I'm going to have you talk really for a few minutes about other things that you're doing. So about the support group and other things around all of that, the support after they've gone home and what kind of support you give and provide and offer to those families.
They signed a consent to allow me to be able to contact them and keep in touch. And sometimes that's by phone call, sometimes by email. And occasionally, some people want that face to face whenever they're ready to get out of the house, but not ready to see other people. Most of the times, whenever families come to OB, I am able to meet with them, which is great that I can automatically put a face, they can put a face to my name and the information that they're given. That makes it seem a little less scary. But I just keep in contact a lot over that first month, making sure that they're doing okay because the days are heavy. And then also just remembering their baby's birthday, because sometimes their body may go back into the normal and it may hit them that, oh, I was supposed to be 24 weeks, or oh, it was my due date. And sometimes even that week leading up, they've told me they're like, I didn't even think about it because they had tried to turn that part of their brain off until I sent them a message and they're like, no wonder I've been so crabby, or like, why have I been so sad? So like, I mean that feeling is deep-seated into your heart. So keeping up with them over the first several months very closely. And then depending on how interactive they are with me, I will continue. I do continue throughout that first and second year for sure. But those that are very interactive or need or want more support, we do continue to converse frequently. We do, like I said, have a very active support group. And with that, we're trying to move out into the community. Earlier this year, we did boxing as a support group. And while in those moments, nothing we talked about was loss, but just being together was something that was really, really beneficial to several of the families because they haven't done anything out in public since they've lost their baby. So just getting to do some normal activities looking forward. We're going to do an axe throwing event. And the place that we're going has allowed us to gather some hurtful words and phrases that people have said, and they're going to let us put that on the targets that we can throw the axe to that. So it'll be something that will be tangible to be like, I'm upset about X, Y, and Z, and kind of bring forth and truly work through some of that grief. And again, just being together and kind of walking these roads together, people that you never would have met, you might have stood next to them 3 years ago in Walmart and didn't know who they were, but now they're some of the closest people that we communicate with. So just knowing again that when you're having a hard day, that there's people to reach out to, and that's what is connecting these families. Or I do have patients that I've come into contact with that while their story it's meaningful to me, I know that they can benefit from meeting with another share mom that is close with me, that she's very comfortable sharing her story and walking someone through that I can give that information to that lost mom, and she can connect and truly feel a sense of finally, somebody understands and, kind of taking that deep breath. So just putting people together and being a community is what we're working on right now.
Yeah, and I love that. I was hoping that you wouldn't forget that part, that you are so good about connecting them to another mom. I think that's a big, huge for those that have experienced loss. It's just being connected to at least one other person that truly gets it, is what I'll say, that truly understands and knows what you're feeling. It is so important. And I know that you do an amazing job of connecting them together. I love that we're now going boxing and doing some boxing therapy, and that we're going to go through axe. And we've talked about some other things that I think what's nice about those activities too that we're doing in planning is it's also bringing the partner or the husband in to the group as well. Sometimes they're very lost, left behind. A lot is done for the mom. People are always checking on the mom and not necessarily the dads. And so I love that these events that you're planning, that we're planning kind of together, is bringing the dads in. I love partnering with you. I love partnering with Cher at Anderson to go to the doctor's offices to support the support group, to help to go with the boxing and all of that. It brings me great joy to be able to partner together with you in all those aspects. And I think we have more ideas and things that will be coming that we'll partner with and do as we move forward. So I want to thank you for all of that that you do and allowing me to really be a part of that as well. But before we conclude, I always end with allowing my guests to share first, if there's anything else that I didn't ask a question first, share about that. And if not, just words of inspiration, encouragement to the listeners coming from you as either a lost mom, as a share coordinator, or as a nurse. I mean, you have lots of aspects, lots of views that you have. Share with them anything else that you'd like to share with them as far as encouragement, inspiration, any of those kind of things.
I think the biggest thing is this, just that you're not alone. Remembering that, especially at 2 in the morning when the nights are long or hard, or you just got done going to a family member's baby shower or getting that invitation, something like that. Just remembering that you're not alone. There's people here to walk alongside you with it. We don't always have the right answers, but at least we're willing to stand with you, hold your hand, walk with you. And then not being afraid to share your story. I think even for myself, it was a lot, just being more vocal about it. Like on a personal aspect, I'm fine, sharing experiences as a labor nurse, but being able to be a little bit more vulnerable. In those moments, you educate people of things, and whether it's ill-intended or not, they can learn from that, of things that have, were
Sure.
said, or just how to be respectful to people in general. Like if somebody's crabby at Walmart, it's not necessarily because they want to be crabby. It's just because you don't know where they just came from. So just allowing grace in general, and I think that's one of the biggest things that share moms have said, that while you also can get angered easier, there's a lot more grace as well, of just, you don't know what somebody's heart is or what just happened to them. So just allowing you to share your story, to it's okay to talk about your baby, even if it's 10 years later. It's okay to talk about your baby, that time doesn't matter. Your baby matters, and that you matter, and your heart matters to us. So.
Oh, I love that. And we just know the only thing I want to add to that is, you should share that about sharing your story, no matter what the time frame is. I know just from what I do as a grief specialist, is that sharing our stories are so healing. They're just huge for your grief journey, is to share about your baby, share about your loved one. It's just so important. So I'm always encouraging people to share the story. And I would encourage anyone that hasn't experienced that to ask someone to share about their child or their loved one, for sure. So again, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing lots of great information, lots of wisdom. You've been in the industry a long time and have experienced a lot. And so I want to thank you for doing what you're doing in all of those aspects, and then just sharing with us today so that we can benefit from all of your wisdom.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me and listening in today to this episode. Just real quick, wanted to just remind you that any resources that we referenced during the episode will be linked in the show notes, so you can find those. Also, ways to get in contact with me, to get on my calendar, to talk, all that is in the show notes. And I would love to have a great rating and review. 5 stars would be amazing. And again, thanks for listening in today.